Tanya 200. We are reviewing the 40 or the 53 chapters of the first part of Tanya, celebrating the 200th anniversary since the printing of the Tanya. We are up to chapter 45, but to review and bring you up to date, it all begins with the verse that Moses says to the people. It is very close to you, in your mouth and in your heart, to do. He's referring to serving God. And he's encouraging the people, he's telling them that it is not a difficult or otherworldly thing to do. It is very close, meaning it is natural, for you to serve God with your mouth, with your heart, and with your doing. Which means thought, speech, and deed. But when it says your heart, meaning the emotions, here we find that nature does not necessarily cooperate. We don't find that it is natural for the human heart to love God or to fear God, which are the primary emotions of the heart. So when Moses says, it is very close to you in your heart to serve God, how is that true? How does that work? And so the Rebbe explains that to serve God with your heart, meaning to arouse an emotion of love or fear for God, takes a certain amount of understanding, a certain amount of insight and contemplation on God's greatness. If we think about God's greatness in that he is very distant and infinite and unreachable and unknowable and so on, this will arouse a feeling of fear. If we contemplate the fact that God is close and that God is available, then it will engender a feeling of love in the heart. But in order for that to happen, the thoughts that we're thinking, these ideas of God's greatness or of God's closeness, have to be understood so thoroughly, so graphically, that the information and the understanding in the mind will actually stir the heart to an emotion. But if we don't understand, if our understanding is shallow, it won't reach the heart. It has to be very graphic, very palpable, in order for the heart to respond. And so not everybody is capable of that kind of understanding where God is so real and so tangible that the knowledge can actually stir the heart. That's why it is not easy, or doesn't seem to be naturally available or close to the average person's heart to serve God, to do the mitzvah, to perform the commandments with love and fear. However, the Rebbe says, it is closer than we think, because even the person who doesn't have that kind of insight and understanding of God to be able to arouse an actual full-blown emotion in the heart, where the heart actually beats differently, excitedly, by the thought of God's greatness or the thought of God's closeness, even so, the mind is capable of coming to a conviction. A conviction meaning what ought to be, to know what ought to be. And anyone contemplating God, even to a minimal degree, God's greatness or God's closeness or goodness or whatever, must come to a conclusion in the mind that God ought to be served with love and fear. That it's only right, appropriate, correct, the way it should be. And that kind of a conviction does affect the heart. Although it doesn't produce a full-blown, raging flame of love or fear, the way a true understanding of God would, but even so, it does produce a stirring of the heart, where the heart is in fact involved in the performance of the mitzvah, and so you are serving God with your heart. And although it is only the practical side of the emotion, see, there are emotions that are true, original, genuine emotion for its own sake. But then there are the emotions that are the more practical, the love and the fear, that are necessary for behavior. What's going to move you to get up and go? What's going to move you to do this? What's going to move you to give charity? What's going to move you to observe the commandments? For that practical result, we need only the practical side of the emotion. And that's what conviction is called. The conviction of emotion is the practical side of emotion, and it gets us to do the act, to do the mitzvah. And so when it says, it is close to you in your mouth and in your heart to do, we're talking about in the heart to do, the part of the heart necessary for the doing. And so it is not as far or as difficult as it first appeared. But then Moses says, it is very close to you. To explain how it's very close, the Rebbe introduces the idea that every godly soul, which is a little piece of God from above, inherits a love and a fear for God that is not the product of understanding. It is not an emotion born out of intellect. It doesn't come from our appreciation of God's greatness or of God's closeness. It is a natural condition in the heart where the soul does not want to be separated from God and wants to cleave to God. And so if we simply activate that love which already exists, then we serve God with a true, genuine, absolutely eternal love and fear that is in some way greater and truer than any kind of a love that we can stimulate in our hearts through our understanding, even the greatest of understanding. And so it is very close in that the love that we inherit is available to everyone. The love that we get from the patriarchs that is natural to the godly soul, this is available to everyone. It already exists. We need only to uncover it because it is a hidden love. Now, in the more recent chapters, the Rebbe goes into a more specific and a more detailed discussion of the different kinds of love and the different ways in which we experience love. Generally, there are two degrees of love. One is called the great love, Ahava Rabba. Great love means a love that is given from above. A love given from above is a reward for those who serve God with a full and complete range of fear of God. So when a person on his own brings himself to a true fear of God, which is easier, closer than loving God, then as a reward, in return, in response to the fear of God, God grants the person a great love that is a gift from above. Why is it called a great love? Because it has no limits. It's by God's measure rather than by human measure. And so it's called great in that it is endless or limitless. There's another kind of love. This love is called the eternal love, Ahavas Olam, eternal love. But eternal is related to time or to creation. This is the kind of love that a person arouses through their own efforts, by their own efforts. In thinking about the greatness of the world and thinking about the greatness of creation, we come to an awe and a love of the Creator. Now, the benefit of this kind of love is that it is more personal. A person connects to it more intimately because it's coming from within themselves. The downside is that since the love is the result or the product of our assessment of creation, the love can't be any greater than creation. And so it's got a limit. It is a finite love. There will be some point where the love will cease, where the love will stop. So, for example, if a person thinks about how great life is, and as a result, he becomes grateful, moved by the Creator who grants life, or the source of life, and he now loves God and fears God as a result, he is certainly not going to love God to such a degree where he is willing to give up his life. Because his love for God came as a result of how much he appreciates life. Because he appreciates his life so much, he is grateful, deeply grateful to the Creator who gave him life. But that gratitude or that love can't overwhelm his appreciation of life to allow him to sacrifice his life or give up his life for this love. And so it's a finite love. So again, there is the infinite love, which knows no limits because it comes from above. But on the other hand, it is not personal. It's not as internalized because it is not the person's own result of his own efforts and of his own understanding. Then there is the finite love, avas olam, the eternal love, that although it's finite, it has the virtue of being more personal, more internalized, because it comes from an internal process where my thoughts, my appreciation, my understanding has led me to this emotion. So we have the endless love, and we have the finite love, the personal love. But these are degrees of love. There are also types of love. And in chapter 45, the Rebbe describes these two kinds of love, or a number of different kinds of love. One kind of love that the Rebbe says is available to every human being, and it doesn't demand great understanding and great contemplation, is the kind of love that is described or mentioned in the prophet, where it says, "Ivisicha nafshi ivisicha balayla." We're talking to God, the soul speaks to God and says, "Nafshi, you are my soul. I desire you, I long for you in the night." What does this mean? A person can think about the role that God plays in his life and find that God is indispensable to life. God is the source of all pleasure, God is the source of all goodness, so that life without godliness would be tragically empty and meaningless, and therefore he loves God because of the meaning that gives to his life, or the pleasure that it gives to his life. But there's also the experience where we realize not that God gives meaning to life, but that God is life. Not that my soul wants godliness, but that the soul is godliness. God is our life, not only an ingredient in life. And so when a person is looking for meaning in life, that's a detail in his existence. But when a person is in a condition where he might not live much longer, or there's a threat to his very life, there is a longing that a person has to survive, to live, to be, which is much deeper and greater, obviously, than any desire for pleasure in life. This is life itself. And so there's this experience where we see God as our life itself. And so we refer to God as Nafshi, my soul. God is my soul. And this creates a longing, this creates a desire that is much greater than the detail that would come from God being the meaning in my life. So, for example, if God was the meaning in my life, I would be very inspired and motivated to observe His commandments. I would get up early in the morning and with great enthusiasm begin my day of serving God by observing His laws and by fulfilling the commandments. But that's if God was the meaning in my life. But if God is my life, when a person's life is on the line, he doesn't wait for the day to begin. He doesn't wait for the order of the day in which he will pursue life. When life is on the line, he wants his life back immediately. Not soon, not later. So what happens when we recognize God as our life and we refer to God as our soul, then we desire to be closer to God and to serve God even during the night. In other words, we don't wait for an opportunity. We create the opportunity. And so the Zohar says that it is proper for a person to get up in the middle of the night and study Torah, because that expresses this particular style of love that we have within us, and that is the recognition that God is life. And if God is life, what do you mean you're going to wait until the morning to start your service of God? Wake up in the middle of the night and do it. In other words, under all circumstances, immediately you want to be involved with God, because God is life, and you don't delay life. You don't put off life. So this is a kind of love called Nafshi Ivisicha. My soul, I long for you. Where God is our soul, God is life. But even here, as I mentioned earlier, the desire that one has for life is much more intense than any pleasure or detail in life. But still, life is significant. And so in this particular love, we are not moved to self-sacrifice. On the contrary, we want God because God is life. But we're not moved to sacrifice our life. There's another kind of love. This kind of love is called the son who is devoted to his father or to his mother more than to his own life. And so he will serve them even if it means giving up his own life. He will save them even at the expense of his own life. So we have this feeling also towards God. It is native in the soul. It is natural to the soul to relate to God as a father, and that's why we refer to God as our father. And in that love, in this particular style of love, the love overwhelms life. It is not synonymous with life. It is greater than life, and therefore it allows the devotion that reaches the degree of self-sacrifice where we are willing to give up our lives so that God will have what God wants. And that's called self-sacrifice. So these are the two kinds of love, and they, each of them can be experienced either as an eternal love or as a great love. So they can be finite or they can be infinite, limitless. Now, in chapter 45, which we're about to begin, the Rebbe says that in addition to these kinds of loves mentioned, there is a certain love that is available to everyone, which enables him to serve God and to do mitzvahs and to study Torah properly with love and fear, which serve as wings to enable the mitzvah to rise and to connect to God more intimately. Love and fear are the right and left, which are the wings that that give the mitzvah, the performance of the mitzvah, of the commandment, its buoyancy and its ability to rise towards God. There is another way that is available to every person, and that is through the attribute of compassion. Which means that when a person takes into account that this godly soul within us that has descended from the highest of heavens, from the highest plane of existence, where it was a piece of God, and it comes down into this unholy world and is exposed or affected by the unholiness not only of the natural condition, but also of the misbehavior, of the sins that we commit, drawing greater ungodliness to ourselves. And yet, the godly soul has to live within us and be subjected to those experiences. We arouse a feeling of compassion for the soul, as if a king, a great king, a worthy king, is being dragged into an unholy place that he doesn't want to be. And so the Shekhinah, God himself, is in exile within us when we're not doing mitzvahs, when we're not serving God. And that is a great pity, a great compassion that we feel for the soul. So the expression in the Torah that Jacob is the rope of God's inheritance is here understood to mean that we are connected to God as with a rope. Now whatever you tug on the one end of the rope, it affects the opposite end. So when we here drag ourselves into unholy conditions, into unholy behavior, this is the bottom of the rope. The top of the rope, the part that connects us to God, is affected as well, and we're literally dragging God into unholiness. And this is the meaning of the story of the verse where Jacob comes and he meets Rachel. He meets Rachel. And it says, he kissed Rachel and cried. What is the meaning of this? We know that the patriarchs represent the three major emotions: love, fear, and compassion. Avraham served God out of love, Yitzchak served God out of fear, and Yaakov served God out of compassion. So Yaakov is the embodiment of compassion in godliness, godly compassion. Rachel is the mother. She is the mother of the Jewish people. So she is the collection, the source of the collective souls that became the Jewish people, the children of Israel. And so when Yaakov sees the condition of the souls, where they have descended into this world and are exposed to all sorts of unholiness, Yaakov, being the compassion, cries for Rachel, or with Rachel, over the souls that are dragging godliness into unholiness. And that compassion enables the soul to rise and to reconnect with godliness, restoring the Shekhinah, or putting holiness back to where it belongs. So this attribute of compassion actually releases the love that we have no access to because of our own unholiness. Which means, this natural love that every soul has for God, because a soul is godly, yet we don't feel it. We don't have access to that love. It's like a mother who can't seem to locate her maternal instincts. We know they're there, they're natural, they're native, but somehow they're blocked. How do you unblock? How do you get rid of the resistance or the obstacle that keeps the natural love that we have from coming to the surface and from expressing itself? The solution is compassion. It is much easier to arouse compassion than to generate love. But the nature of these emotions are that love follows compassion. So that wherever there is compassion, the resistance to love is removed, and then the love that is there is revealed and flows naturally. And that is also the meaning of the statement, Jacob who redeemed Abraham, Yaakov who redeemed Avraham. What does it mean, Yaakov redeemed Avraham? As we said, Avraham is love, Yaakov is compassion. When the love, when the attribute of Avraham, which we inherit, the love that we inherit from Avraham, is blocked up and we can't seem to access it, we can't seem to stimulate it or to reveal it, the solution for redeeming this imprisoned love is Yaakov, compassion. So when a person considers that godliness, holiness is native to his soul or her soul, and when we do things that are ungodly and when we behave in an ungodly fashion, we are dragging godliness into unholiness where it doesn't want to be. So when God says, don't do such and such, it is an abomination in my eyes, God is literally asking that we not drag him into this behavior that is distasteful to him. How do we drag God into anything? Because our soul is a piece of God, anything we do involves our soul, our godly soul. And by involving the godly soul, you're literally involving God himself. Now, how sensitive is a godly soul? How sensitive is any soul? Compared to the body, the soul sensitivity is infinite, infinitely greater than the sensitivity of a body. So that which is uncomfortable to a soul is infinitely more uncomfortable or painful than that which is uncomfortable or painful to a body. And so the compassion that we arouse for the godliness within us, not to want to drag it into exile, into unholiness, releases the love that we have in our soul so that we can serve God with love and fear as a result of the compassion.